And welcome back to another episode of Higher Power Tech Podcast, a podcast that connects you to the hiring power you deserve. Today, we have a special guest. Before I get to that, I am Mark Komar, and this is my co-host, Josh Starnes. And today, we have a very, very special guest joining us today. This gentleman, both Josh and I have had the pleasure of meeting him through our professional suits, working with Kane Ross and staffing firm. We got a chance to work with this gentleman in helping provide talent for his organizations. Mr. Curtis Thompson, a VP in roles, has worked with Fortune 500 companies. His list of accomplishments and degrees are long, from a Bachelor of Science in Computer Information Systems to Master's of Science Information Management from Arizona State University, has a certification from Harvard Business School. He is a Lean Six Sigma Master Black Belt, Project Manager Professional, Certified Scrum, and the list goes on and on. He also has developed a course through Coursera for the University of Arizona State on dark data. He has also published and written a book, Redesign the Box, Foundations for Value Creation, Dark Data, and Data Product. This gentleman is, accomplished from all sense of the word, and we're happy to have you, Mr. Thompson, here on the show. Thank you for taking time out to be with us today.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me. I definitely appreciate that intro. You make me sound really professional. You make me sound real good. So I really appreciate it. We've talked a lot. We've worked on a lot of things together. So I'm happy to be here. Happy to have this conversation.
Excellent. Excellent. So, I went down the list of your background a little bit, your degrees, your certifications. You've been in major roles, VP roles. I think you've dealt with budgets of 13 million plus of $9 million. So you understand, you've been in the tech industry, engineering industry. Let's kind of start from the beginning. What was your inception to wanting to get in the tech engineering field? Like, what was the impetus to you wanting to start in that path?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Mark. I appreciate that. And I appreciate the intro. In terms of getting started on the path, we get the opportunity when you're sort of in management and leadership at Fortune 500 companies, you get the opportunity to manage a lot of people, a lot of great people, get the opportunity to mentor people, grow them. You get to handle, like you said, budgets of up to $40 million, $50 million, even $100 and $200 million dollars. And some people, they may even manage budgets a lot larger, right? So for me personally, when I think about what started me on this path, part of it is my own personal personality, getting an understanding of myself. The other part is somewhat happenstance, right? So if we're talking about how did I end up in this path, being open to listening to others when they suggest things, right? I actually did my undergrad at Computer Information Systems only because someone suggested it to me. Initially I was doing business administration, went from that to radio and television. And I didn't like radio and television at all. It felt more like memorization and just repetitive steps. And, there's a space for that, but for different types of people, their minds work different. So for me, the moment I took that first class in just UI engineering, I flew through the textbook in the first 2 weeks. By the second month of the class, I'm sitting there showing the teacher where they were wrong with stuff. And I'm not really a person who's I'm not really a student type of a person. I'm a student of life. I'm a student of how we get things done, but I'm not a traditional go to school, enjoying school, let me get awesome grades. But once I changed my major to computer information systems, I immediately got straight A's. So I went from a C student to straight A. But, being open to listening to others suggest things was helpful, because sometimes I think like I may have stated before, you have to get to know yourself. And when I was young, I had forgotten that I had a lot of a strong inclination towards computers. I was a kid. I would go in my mom's computer and they had MS-DOS back in the day. I'd go reprogram QBasic and figure out what the languages were at nighttime. And then, I'd buy little computer games. I'd reprogram the computer games. Because this was back when they were on the floppy disks, the hard floppy disks.
The old box Apple computers that we had in school.
Yeah.
Playing those, that, what was that game? Trailmaster? The
Oregon Trail.
Yeah, Oregon Trail. We all know that game. We're dating ourselves.
I'm going to let you two age yourselves while you two talk. I'm going to stay over here.
Yes. But Josh is absolutely right. Oregon Trail on that big Apple. I think it was Apple II.
Yep.
It was in every school back in the day. But my mom had MS-DOS. She had a PC. So Civilization was a game back then. And I know that has grown over iterations, but that was one of the games I went in there and just reprogrammed the whole thing, right? But yeah, so understanding, once I started taking those classes, it then dawned on me like, hey, when I was a kid, I was drawn to this. Hmm. And that's how even my schooling turned around. Because I was pretty much most of my life, I was a C student until I changed to computer information systems. And I just overnight turned into a straight A student. So, you know, you just sometimes knowing yourself and being open to learning consistently, right?
That's awesome. So how does one then take? Yeah. So then how does one, being open as you are to once you got the suggestion to get in that particular field, how does one take it from Alabama State to Fortune 500 now, you know, companies to work for? How does one progress to that, you know, from, you know, that level to the next level?
That's a whole other journey. Well, personally, my journey wasn't necessarily, I would say, the standard version. But, you know, most people, if you're thinking about how you get to Fortune 500, generally there's a few routes. And nowadays there's a little bit more. So back in our day, you go to college, you get an internship. From your internship, you then figure out and navigate your way into whatever company you've been in. Right.
Right.
The advantage for tech folks are, if you get an internship in technology and you really take the time to know how to build software or whatever it is you're doing, data analytics, UI engineering, et cetera, if you take the time to really know how to do that, companies will hire you immediately from college, which is different than some of the other majors where, you know, maybe some of your skill set may be a commodity, right? So with technology, if you can show your brilliance early, people are happy to bring you. But for me, it was a little different. Because I graduated during the Great Recession and I was a college athlete, so I never did an internship. I ran track. At the time, my idea was trying to get to the Olympics until I got an injury, right? So once I got injured, I didn't have any internship and I had to sort of start all over. I mean, I left college waiting tables. All right, that first year I was waiting tables with a college degree. And, you know, it was a good thing because it was humbling, but it also help build up more desire to, you know, to try to prove myself. Got my first break. I had to go back to Cleveland, worked in city government, and then just worked my way up from there. Figured out a way to get to Arizona, got a master's, worked at ASU while I was getting the master's. And then from there, I got recruited out of ASU by American Express. And then from there, I kept going up and continued consistently trying to proactively learn, right? And that's sort of some of the things that I talk about in the book, Redesign the Box, that is a part of the course for Dark Data, is it's always better to know than to learn, but you always have to know that you have to learn. So as long as you keep that process and do it proactively, you'll typically be in a better position, more consistent. It's not enough to know that you have to learn. You have to know that it has to be a proactive approach. And then sometimes you will be reactive, but if you've done it proactively, you'll position yourself a little better.
Right.
So those are some of the principles that I just operate from. And if you're asking, like, how will somebody get into corporate America, Fortune 500, you know, the route of internship straight there, got to be able to consistently learn. And then one other piece I think I failed to mention. Nowadays, they have a lot of these coding boot camps, and personally me, and speaking to hiring tech talent, right? When it came to hiring the entry-level people, I actually found that the people out of boot camps typically were more productive faster on average. Because you still have your rock stars that come out of colleges, but they're typically more productive faster because they learned different. You know, there's more of an application approach.
Application, yeah.
Yeah, where college is a more theory and then they get to a little application by the end of it. So if you don't have a college student who has a natural desire to proactively learn and like go into the class and take the class projects to another level, which isn't which isn't usual. That's typically a not usual thing. They're typically going to enter the workforce with just theoretical knowledge, which isn't bad, but it's not going to be as productive as fast.
I agree with that for sure.
Go ahead, Josh.
Yeah, so I'm glad you spoke on that, Curtis. Because so it's a few questions I kind of want to piggyback on. You talked about, you know, the older model of internship and progression, even though yours wasn't, from what you share, wasn't that systematic of an approach to get to, you know, from college to the corporate world. But, and you also merged or the understanding of currently now with boot camps being a I guess a place where a lot of companies are going towards getting, you know, particular talent. Let me ask you this, for someone coming out right now out of a 4-year, you know, situation, what would you recommend to them if they've already done an internship or they haven't done an internship? Like, how would you position them to compete with someone who's, you know, coming out of boot camp and has had the application process already so ingrained in them? How would you tell them to compete to set themselves apart, you know, if you were the hiring manager right now?
Yeah, absolutely. Let me clarify what you're asking. I just want to make sure you're asking for someone specifically coming out of college, how are they compete against everybody, but more specifically, probably higher talent or better talent or talent that's more prepared to perform earlier, right? Is that sort of what you're asking?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Well, I think those same principles hold true. You know, some of the things that we know just specifically about America, the basis of the country is, you know, you got your free will. And at the end of the day, if you want to do something, you have to figure it out and be able to move forward no matter what, right? Mm-hmm. So with that as a base premise, you got to think about it holistically. Like, I'm coming out of college and there's kids every year coming out of all of these great colleges, mm-hmm. a lot of brilliant kids. So the average kid coming out of college, you know, you're going to be in a swamp of a ton of people. Mm-hmm. And then now with all of these different paths, especially within something like engineering and technology, where you can learn it yourself. And historically you couldn't go online and learn it. So you would have to go through a college. You want to make sure you take, I would say, take that step to proactively learn and not only learn the engineering, but understand the companies that you're going to, try to network before you get there. And then also be able to show your suite of skills as well as your portfolio. So as like we're saying, these kids that come out of boot camps, they'll have projects prepared in their GitHub repository that we can see, and they'll be really nice. And the college students may as well, but they may not have went as far in their projects, right? So if you can come out having already built an app, right? If you can come out showing where you've done an extreme analysis on something, if you're doing data analysis, or if you're doing data science or AI, and you've already built your own AI package and you've been able to deploy it, and you can show the brilliance in your work. I think most employers look at that and say, okay, this guy, this lady is an overachiever, right? That's the way I would look at it. Because if I just, you know, if they did it how I did it, and just come out of college and, hey, I got this degree, people are going to say, that's great, young man. but we have 50 people over here who've already built an app, who've done this, and, you know, they've worked over here. And, you know, if we hired them, they just come in right, ready to work. And you're talking about what you can learn, you know?
So what you're saying is people have differentiators, you know, making sure that you separate yourself from the rest.
Well, it's one thing to say, I'm going to hire this person and now let's make sure we show them how to do something, make sure they feel a certain way. And it's a whole other thing to hire a person and say, I can hand this project off to them and go work on something else.
Yep.
Right. Those are, from a hiring manager perspective, I'm definitely interested in hiring the person where I can hand something off to them. They ask me a few clarifying questions and then they start working on it and they just follow up once in a while with some questions and to get, you know, get updates and things like that. I prefer hiring that person versus hiring someone where I'm holding their hands and, you know, they're feeling uncomfortable. And now how they, you know, it's all those things that come into the play, right? They don't understand something. So now everybody has to stop and, you know, make sure this individual catches up. And there's a place for that. Absolutely. But sometimes if you want to make sure that you're positioned so that you can get the best opportunity, you come out better being that person who can make it happen versus being the person who needs to the guidance.
Right. And I would imagine you having had the budget you've had to deal with, the orgs that you've had to run, you would want that person, like you said, that you can hand something off to and they can, you know, kind of sprint with it, if you will, to a certain degree, because yeah. you have this budget, you know, of, you know, $13-20 million that you have to, you know, manipulate to make sure it's being used the proper way. So you don't necessarily have time to coddle and kid glove someone through the learning process. Am I correct?
Yeah, absolutely. No. You're 100% correct. You know, it's something to be said. You can hand it off and, you know, you just get updates and you make, you know, you're just giving suggestions on how to make something better versus having to sit there and manage it individually. Because if you think about it, right, I've been a VP at these companies and for me, it's a lot managing. You know, I think the largest org I've managed personally has been about like 70 people. Mm-hmm. So the boss above me, wow. she's managing about 200, 300 people under her books, right? Possibly yeah. even more. So there's a large area for us to manage. And if we're sitting there having to deal with every single fire that comes up, if we're not hiring people who can just figure things out, give us update, and we can consult and confer with them, then it becomes too much to deal with, right? At some point, it's like I found that my best employees are the people that I learn from, right? It's like I've hired somebody and they're finding problems and solving them. And we didn't even know they were problems. We just were experiencing the symptoms of the problems, but didn't know where to go to get something solved. So they come in and they got this done, this, that done. You know, that's a blessing to a leader, right? That's a super blessing because now I got the confidence that this person is going to, you know, handle things appropriately. And wherever the other fires are, I can focus on those versus having 20 fires and then having to put all of them out myself, you know? So right. for the SVP that's above me, who's managing 200 people, I mean, how would she get anything done if she came to me and she and I'm sitting there like, well, can you tell me what to do? Mm-hmm. She has to come to me and I have to be able to say, hey, look, this is what's going on. This is what we've done. And out of these five things, we got this all knocked down. I need your advice on this one piece because this is where we are. Like, that's what they sort of want to hear.
Yep.
Right. So it's the same as it comes down to each and every level, even down to that junior level engineer. Same thing.
Yeah. Thank you for that clarity. And go ahead, Josh.
I'm going to say, you know, you've got a very impressive background. You've worked for some amazing companies. And, you know, Mark and I have had the pleasure of working with you outside of all of this. And so I also wanted to say thank you for joining us today and giving us some of your knowledge. But what are you seeing today in today's hiring industry from your perspective? As a VP of IT, what are you really seeing in the industry with, you know, candidates and working with different vendors and what are you seeing and what's important to you when looking for some of these individuals today in today's market?
Okay. And let me just clarify. You said what am I saying? Are you seeing like what trends or what challenges that I see? What's coming along?
Yeah, what are you really seeing the differentiators from, say, 10 years ago? You know, times have changed quite a bit, you know, especially on how, like you had mentioned, you know, candidates coming out of college, sometimes they don't necessarily have the same outlook on people that are coming from a boot camp. You know, a boot camp, they're forced to develop and design to get in there and get their hands dirty. And so what are you really seeing in the market today? Are you seeing an influx of candidates coming more from a boot camp environment or a schooling environment? Are you seeing that there's a lot of available candidates that possess the technologies that you're typically looking for?
Yeah.
Do you feel like there are not enough candidates? Like, what are you really seeing in the staffing industry from your perspective?
Gotcha. So, you know, the one thing that I am seeing that I want to start with is the expansion of AI, machine learning, all of the above, right? So when I think about engineering from when I started back in 2006, 2007 to the mid 2010s, 2000, right after COVID, and now there's a number of things that are different, right? So now remote work is the way to go general, right? And companies are now fighting to keep people in get people to come in. However, at companies, usually your top talent can sort of massage their way to figure out what they want to do. And then also the companies who are more lenient on allowing people to work remote are finding better talent. Right. Typically. Now, when we're talking about AI and machine learning, so I'm going to date myself, but back in 2006 to about 2010, Adobe Flash was like this big thing. Everybody wanted Adobe Flash, right? And I was sitting there trying to learn it. I'm sitting an engineer, and I think I got to the point right where I was like, I am a master of Adobe Flash, Adobe Flex, you know, and I think it was about an 8-month period after I've mastered it. I was getting these really big dollar deals from these consulting companies to come in and do these Flash applications that their engineers couldn't do, right? So I get a big lump sum, and at the time, to me, it was a big lump sum, but a big lump sum, right, of money to come do maybe a 4-day project, and the amount of money they would give me lasts like it's worth like two months of a salary, right? Okay. So I get this lump sum, I do this project. I'd be able to knock it out maybe a week, maybe 4 or 5 days, but it was something that was outside of the box and it was really complicated. And a lot of people were ramping up on Adobe Flash, and then Steve Jobs kills it with the iPhone, right? He's like, I'm not going to allow Flash on my products because of risks for viruses. And immediately, like overnight, all of that work started drying up, right? It just started drying up. So that's one of those things that you look at is like, here's some new technology coming in. And everybody's ramping up, trying to learn it, get good at it, and it dies, and now we got to learn something else. Mm-hmm. And what happened is the shift to mobile continued to grow, right? Mm-hmm. So those people who focus on mobile engineering, they started having more work, right? So as we keep going down this pipeline, now we have machine learning and AI, right? And as we noticed, Web 3.0 kicked off, and it's still going. But it's sort of not as fruitful as everybody was thinking when we were talking about the metaverse, right? So NFTs were out there. And I do believe NFTs still have a viable place in the marketplace, right? But I think companies still haven't found how to use them effectively. So you see those things like the Bored Ape Yacht Club, who didn't really provide value, but it was just hot.
Right.
Like a lot of those NFTs have fallen off by the wayside, right? The Beeple NFTs, they're really just pictures.
Because there's no use case, right? At the present moment, there was no real use case.
Exactly. There's no utility. But there is utility for them. I think companies just haven't figured out how to use them. Yeah. And the place that you do see utility for NFTs are in video games. Like video games are still very strong. I think Axie Infinity and a few other ones, they're still using NFTs and they're making the money's rolling in. People are buying them. People are all of those things. But outside of that, companies haven't used. But there's use cases. So that's one of the biggest shifts I see is this, like Web 3.0, NFTs, AI, machine learning. I think AI is obviously that one is going to stay because it's really clear how to use those
how
things.
Use it.
Yeah. It's also very opportunistic for the things that we don't know, talking about the dark data, right? We've seen movies like Terminator, right? Skynet, all of that stuff, right? So those pieces, when you think about the Terminator and Skynet, it's real. You get a good programmer, you get the right type of AI, it could happen. But, you know, we're still far away from that. The real question is where people like Elon Musk are taking this. Like, how are we going to get off the planet and then figure out how to traverse space? And I think AI has a very big opportunity in that space. That's something where, because even when you think about trying to become intergalactic, AI, you're going to have AI to figure out some of the problems. You're going to have AI to manage things as you go on a trip. But we're far from it. But workplace specifically, not to get too far off the tangent, too far off the topic, but workplace specifically, I think AI is the biggest piece. And when I look at the kids coming or people coming out of college, not even kids, but people transferring new jobs, even senior level folks, everybody's trying to ramp up on machine learning. Everybody's trying to ramp up on AI. And people are trying to figure out how to get an advantage in using AI better and data science better. Even at the companies that I've been at, that's been a big part of the game.
So AI right now is the Steve Jobs, if you will, I guess the mobile aspect of what you were talking about with Adobe, right? You know, canceling out Adobe. You would say AI is where the focus should be right now for anybody
coming into, if you're new to tech or you're new to, you know, different programming styles, you would say focus on this is what I'm gathering you to say. Am I correct?
Yeah, I think that's 100% correct. I just, what I would add on to that is with AI being the central piece, I would suggest that these young folks can focus on, not young, everyone. I mean, even people that are using it, focus on AI, machine learning, and the Web 3.0 piece, right? Like all of these pieces, but I would say AI should be possibly your centerpiece of, right? Because you're going to plug in AI in all these pieces. Mm-hmm. Like you're saying, they're able to create music, right? With AI, art with AI, video with AI. There's new Tupac songs out that are just built all on AI, right? And they're good.
And they're launching new AI platforms, it seems like, daily. Yeah. You know, Copilot came out, a little while ago, and it's been phenomenal, and it just keeps advancing. So I definitely agree that you're seeing an AI aspect in everybody's, you know, business. Everybody's in early adoption. However, from another perspective, though, being an IT leader, are there any fears that you see within the AI platform? Are there anything that you see?
Great question.
Because AI is extremely powerful. And do we really understand its full capability? And do you, as a technology professional, do you see any downside to AI?
Great question.
Well, absolutely. And that's a good question, Josh. I really appreciate it. Let me throw this at you. I gave the example of Skynet, right? Of Skynet Terminator. With AI, it is possible, right? So you get deep fake as a big problem with AI. Somebody can own somebody's voice,
imitate,
and start sending messages out as if they were them, right? Like there's a ton of deep fake opportunities. There's that new movie that came out, and I forgot the name of it, but with his little son and the kid was an AI force, right? Depending on how people start using Bluetooth technology, wireless technology, right? You can use AI for a number of things to control devices around you, right? If you have a very good programmer that's able to build on top of the technology that's there. So it's a lot of concern with it. It has to be used responsibly. So it's like AI can be something that helps the existence of all humans substantially, but it can also be something that can be used to control the existence of humans substantially. And it can also be used as something that can destroy the human existence completely.
Yeah. I read an article the other day that had talked about the backend part of AI, you know, everything that we type in, everything that we say, everything that we have AI creates a backlog. So it's where's that information going? Who's utilizing that information? Who has access to it? Who can hack it? Like it's crazy. It really is.
Right. And I'm glad you brought that up because I just want to touch on this, Mr. Thompson. You know, you wrote the book Redesign the Box, and you focus on dark data. Where do you see dark data playing a major role within what you're talking about deep fakes? And, you know, like Josh has asked, where's this information going? Where do you see dark data playing a major role right now in this?
Yeah, that's that question on top of what Josh just said, right? Absolutely. I think that's an awesome question, an awesome thought path. And honestly, that's something like that we go to a cigar lounge, sit, have some cigars, just talk about it for about 4 or 5 hours type of thing, right? Although I don't smoke, but concept, right?
Concept, right.
I'm going to get to that. I want to make one statement first. I'm here living in Litchfield Park, West Arizona, right? The Western Phoenix, right? And they are building tons of data centers out here. And these data centers are for Microsoft, for Apple, for all of the big companies. And all these data centers are the backbone, like we're saying, that lifts up everything on AI, everything on machine learning. Because all of these companies are using cloud technologies, whether it's Azure, AWS, et cetera. So these technologies, the coding, the programming, the processing, are all sitting in these huge warehouses, these data lakes and data centers. And the amount of processing power that they're starting to build out is going to allow them to greatly expand AI. Now, I'm getting into the dark data aspect to come back to your question, Mark. I was saying that to lay the foundation for this. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that we don't know. So ideally, the world in general has found places like Arizona to be great for data farms. Physically, some of the things we don't know is what is the actual carbon footprint for us with AI, right? How does this actually impact us physically from the places that are the backbone for technology? right? And then the good part is they create a lot of jobs, right? They create, so this area is going to keep growing and other areas similar. But then once it's built out, you know, when people, like, for example, people buy electric cars, and that's great, it should save the environment. But as long as you're plugging it into a source that's powered by coal power, you're still impacting the environment regardless.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, Curtis, I just read an article about Tesla specifically about the manufacturing of their batteries and how it played. They said that it took an average of 5 to 7 years for it to have any benefit, you know, from that perspective. So that it's mind blowing. Yeah. When you really start to look into things of what they say, you know, our carbon footprint, if it's 5 to 7 years before you see any benefit, you know, it's crazy. I have to ask myself, is it really worth it? Are we there yet? Is it any better? You know, there's just a lot of questions.
And then how much damage is done before then? And then before you get to that 5 years, right? And then outside of just the carbon input, now the dark data of actually the technology, right? So we're using it. We have the deep fakes. We have all these things. But what are the unknowns? How? Throughout human history, if we think back even to the Dark Ages where the Moors were in Europe, and then going from there all the way into, you know, Nazi Germany. I know that's a touchy subject, but all of the different empires, Roman Empire, et cetera, that existed. And now the United States sort of as an empire. Governments, for a good purpose and sometimes for nefarious purposes, have always used propaganda to help control the population and to push the country or their empire forward. Like I said, for good reasons and for bad reasons, right? There's some nefarious, because at the end of the day, you have to have some level of control so that society doesn't just erupt and, you know, go into some anarchy or chaos. So it's not always a bad thing. But now with AI, if the benevolent actors don't win the AI war and the malicious actors win, that's where we're starting to have more of an issue. So some of this dark data is one of the benefits is if anybody who's talented enough can start building these things. So the gatekeepers are very low for this stuff. However, that also creates more of a problem, because if anybody who's talented enough to build these things builds them, it depends if they're going to be a benevolent actor or a malicious actor. How do we, and I think Congress is doing a good job, I've been tapping into some of the sessions, they're doing a good job of trying to figure out, and I know I might be the only person in the world to ever say Congress is doing a good job, right?
I was about to say, I haven't heard that too often.
Wait a minute.
On the aside here, I've heard the joke, if pro is the antonym for progress, what does Congress make, right? Is that, you know, is that a negative thing? I gotta remind myself of that joke, but basically Congress is definitely something that hasn't been too progressive. But either way, I think in general, regardless of the party, they've been doing a good job of trying to figure out how to put controls around AI so that people can't do things like faith. But the unknown is, like, what can we do? They've made patents for flying cars. Now, over the next few years, we're going to start getting flying cars with AI. How do we use AI to reduce that? I've heard reports where in the next 5 or 10 years, they're going to figure out ways to start crafting laws to enforce people to have driverless cars. So you'll see more driverless cars than driven cars. And some of these are all good. Ideally, it should reduce the impact of crashes. It should reduce somebody getting in a car accident. But how do we use it for what's more possible? And then last piece on how dark data impacts, dark data specifically. This being, I know we talked about it a bit, and for the people who may watch this, I want to give a brief definition. So in general, dark data, people look at it as the unknown or the rot data in the system. And so if you look at it from the technology landscape, it is what is unknown and what is unused. So these companies have a ton of data in their data warehouses, and it's all stacked up. Like I think Josh stated earlier, everything you type in goes into a database somewhere, et cetera. But now how do you use that? And this data is so wide and vast and varied. You can put up another with all types of concepts like data alchemy to say, we figured out how to do this, right?
Yeah.
But That's, I believe that's a narrow way to look at it. So the way I look at dark data, the way I've defined it in the book, Redesign the Box, and for the course that's on Coursera, is everything that impacts what we do know, what we don't know, and what we don't know that we don't know, right? So it's similar to, George Bush's aide, the back in the early 2000s that said, well, we don't know, and now we went to war, and you know, their aluminum tubes could have been bombs, but they're aluminum tubes and they're not bombs, right? But the question becomes, if you don't know what you don't know, but you know what is happening has the possibility to be catastrophic, to be a catastrophe, how do you move forward, right? How do you handle it?
How do you
move
forward?
Yeah. We have a catastrophe possibly coming with AI, or we have something that can elevate us to being a multiplanetary species, right? One is good, one is not. How do we make sure we put the right controls around it when we don't know? So the best way to know is to be the one that does know, which means the people who have the power that to actually build it, right? Those people, we need to make sure that they are sort of, we put more controls or safeguards around how they're able to do these things. But we have to be careful because then you that whole, you know, Nazi Germany type of thing where you're trying to control me. But you got to be in a sort of in a way where, you know, we don't allow people who have the power to then, you know, relegate an unideal life for the rest of us.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So let's flip it around a little bit for everybody. It's a lot of really good information around AI and your journey and everything else from a staffing perspective, from some of these candidates that are out there looking for positions or trying to get into an AI field. Now, you're a hiring leader. Okay. You've hired tons of people. I mean, I've worked with you on some JavaScript roles. We've worked on some other types of business. From that perspective, if you're giving advice to some of these AI developers or people wanting to get into AI and they're looking for employment, they're looking to create a career out of it, they're looking for that journey, what would be your best suggestion for them to get started and how do you see them being most successful in their journey?
Okay. AI specifically. Some of these things come down to who you know, what you know, the network, all that other piece, right? So you have your actual skill piece where the baseline is be the best version of yourself you can be as talented as you can be, have a great portfolio, all of the above, and move forward. The other piece is how do you network? How do you get in front of the right people? How do you talk to the right people? How do you know who are the right people when you don't know, right? A lot of that is you have to get with, especially if you're early in your career, you have to get with staffing agencies sometimes or have the right mentors. And then the other piece is, how do you know who's the right mentor, right? So there's the opportunity out here for everybody to search. I do think the internet provides us a much better platform than our predecessors, our parents, right, who had to go to a library to figure out which book to read to get information. That's a whole different thought, right?
We definitely had advanced. But you know what's great, Curtis, is what you said. We've had, you know, other podcasts where we've referenced networking. You know, we have a podcast on our suggestions for people to start looking for a new career. And the one thing that we really talk about is networking. You know, so it's great to have you come on and talk about that too, that it's important for you, that it's who you know. Sometimes it's not what you know, it's who you know and how to get in the door. So that's great. Thank you for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, just a quick addition to what you're saying, Josh. I'll say networking is super important, like you're saying. And to be as honest and transparent as I can be on this podcast, I would say, even personally, although I have networked, that's a skill that I have to continue growing myself. Right? It's for me, it's an opportunity to continue being better. Through my career, I've traditionally just relied on my performance primarily, and I still had networking, but I typically grew from good performance. However, if my networking skills were much better, I probably could have grown faster, could have done a lot better. So networking is super important because one thing is for certain, no matter how talented you are, you can't do anything in a career field by yourself. Somebody has to hire you. Somebody has to refer you. Yes. Somebody has to suggest you for that promotion, right? No matter how good you are. So it's something to keep in your back pocket. Yeah, your talent has to be there. Absolutely. like you, and I think more always harp on. I mean, networking is pivotal, especially the higher up you go.
Yeah. Yep. And if I could just piggyback on that, and Mr. Thompson, thank you for sharing that. Because like Josh said, we've had multiple episodes, and those who are following us and subscribe to us, you've heard us talk about the networking process, but you also have heard us talking about, which Mr. Thompson just alluded to, which is skill development, right? And he understands, even in his senior level, VP level of budgets of, you know, 40 million, 30, you know, 13 million, you know, you can hear his vast knowledge. He teaches, he understands, you know, what we don't understand. He's trying to know what he doesn't understand, but he still talks about the importance of skilling up. He still talks about the importance of trying to make sure he continues to grow himself, so therefore he can still matriculate, as we all are trying to do, to that next level, and whatever it is, maybe whatever that may be for you. So to hear you say that, Mr. Thompson, I appreciate you sharing that transparent moment, because I don't want people to skip past that. And that goes to the credit of you are continuing, even when you were younger, you were open, right, to learn and to hear. That's what, you know, puts you into the trajectory of where you are right now. But I think the fact that, again, even at your senior level, to say you're open to knowing what you don't know, which is or you're not great at from your perspective, right? But you're willing to learn it, which is the skill of networking, you know, to grow yourself. So, ladies and gentlemen, again, we just want to let you know, when Josh and I speak on these things, this is why we bring on experts like Mr. Thompson, and he's confirming without, we didn't have a meeting before this conversation, did we? But he's confirming a little bit of what we all talk about and what we always say, because it's just fundamental truths to one's growth and matriculation in any industry, really in life. It's fundamentals. You heard Mr. Thompson talk about the understanding the foundational approach to anything, which is have that desire to move forward, to push, to learn, to grow. So these are great points. Mr. Thompson, before we let you go, thank you for sharing, like Josh said, thank you for sharing so much information with us. Is there anything you would like to leave with our audience, anyone trying to pursue in your footsteps of technology growth and knowledge, or even with your knowledge on dark data? I know you teach the course at ASU, and your book can be found on Coursera and Amazon. Anything you'd like to leave that we haven't discussed or we haven't talked about?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for that. Thanks for everything you just said there, Mark. I think I want to take what you said and just really maybe add to it a little bit, because I think you hit it home, man. You hit a grand slam with that. You know, going like, as you're asking, if you're saying who wants to either follow my footsteps, do better, do a different path, but do something similar. If you're an engineer and you want to get into engineering management, you want to get into leadership roles and the VPs or directors and things like that, I think you have to be grounded in the skill set first. And you also, in parallel, so it's like two first, and you'll get this in corporate America a lot, because they'll say, what's more important? Both of them. That's the first thing. What's more important? Both of them. Yes, that's what it is, right? And then you got to go figure it out from there, right? You have to be grounded in your skill set first, but also in first, you have to be grounded in your skills in dealing with people, EIQ, managing other folks, even managing your leaders. Like I said, for me, I actually find it best when I can learn from the people I hire. And in some way, when I am learning from them, they're somewhat managing me, right? Mm-hmm. In a way. And I say that to say, these are all the concepts that we go over in that dark data book. Dark data book isn't only data. It is actually primarily more about managing the unknowns in life and then relating it to engineering. So you, like Mark said, you can catch the course on Coursera, and you can also catch the book on Amazon. It's right there, Redesign the Box, Dark Data, Data Products. And the thing about dark data that's so important, and I know I said this earlier, the key thing is you have to consistently and proactively learn, but you're better positioned to know. If you're networking, you're better positioned to know who to network with than to have to learn, right? You're better positioned to know where to go to get some information than having to learn to where to go. Cause if you have to learn where to go to get the information, you might spend 3 or 4 weeks trying to figure it out. So you come out better understanding that you need to know, and proactively learning. And one of the concepts that we talk about in the book, and that's going to be in one of my following books, is this ULEAD concept. And that's ULEADD. And it's understand, learn, evaluate, assess, define, and design. And I think that's, I think most people, this isn't only for engineering, this really is in life. I think most people, I've definitely done this a number of times. Most people, when they face an issue or a problem or are trying to solve something, they start off with trying to design a solution, right? Mm-hmm. They start off with, you know, I got to go get my car washed, but I can't find my keys or whatever it might be that you're trying to do. Even something as simple as that. When you're trying to figure something out, especially the more complex it is, such as your career, you come back stepping back and say, you come better off stepping back and saying, I need to understand and then learn right now before I can start defining what the problem is or designing. And like most people say now, instead of saying problem, the opportunity, right? Defining what the actual opportunity is. Because if you step in, if you step into a place and you're like, okay, well, this is the problem, that's the problem, especially you're going to a new company, everybody there already knows the problems that are there. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows the opportunities. The real question is, who's going to understand how to do it most effectively and efficient? And then who's going to learn what's needed to do it? And then evaluate, assess how to do it, because it's more than tactically doing it. It's also knowing which people to talk to, because as soon as you start trying to make a change to improve something, you're going to step on somebody's toes,
right?
Because somebody else was already working on it. And if you do it, they're going to be mad that you figured it out. So you got to evaluate and assess. And then you have to design or define and design the solution, right? And the design typically includes other people, part of your network. So not to go too far in it, but that's part of the education we provide and part of the information that's in the book. A lot of the information that's making sure you take those steps before you move into designing and defining. And I took parts of the concepts out of Six Sigma and the whole DMAIC concept, define, measure, analyze, improve, control, and then expanded it for the more complex modern environment.
Nice. Definitely interesting talk.
Yes. Absolutely. Yes. Yes. Mr. Thompson, we want to say thank you, man, for your time. Ladies and gentlemen, go get his book, Redesign the Box. If you've been watching this whole episode, you can see behind Mr. Thompson parts of some of his diagrams and that he has in the book behind him. But go get that book off of Amazon or Coursera if you want to get it. We're going to put links to his book below just so you guys can go there as well. Mr. Thompson, again, vast world of information and knowledge you have to share, but you do a great job of breaking it down where it's not too esoteric or too over the top, where that layman person can't understand. And we appreciate you being able to share that with us. So if ever I'm in ASU, I might have to stop in and take your course as well. Josh, anything you'd like to leave off with?
Nothing else. Just say thank you so much for being a guest in our show today. And you've helped kind of reiterate some of the stuff that we've been telling people and talking to candidates and talking to hiring leaders and stuff like that. So I do appreciate your time. And I'm sure at some point we'll have you back on for another subject or two.
All right. Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it. This is a great, great conversation. And happy to be part of the podcast. Absolutely.
And real quick, Mr. Thompson, is there any place that people can, you would like for them to reach out to you besides just going to Amazon and getting your book? Any social you want to leave them off with that we can?
Yes, absolutely. The Instagram is Redesign the Box, just like the book. There's a website, redesignthebox.com. You can go there, find all the information you need. Everything links, directs you to all of the things within my platform. My LinkedIn is just my actual name, Curtis L. Thompson. LinkedIn / Curtis L. Thompson.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for attending with us here at Higher Power Tech. If you have any questions, comments, you can always reach Josh and I at our higherpowertech.com. If you want to talk with us, subscribe, we're here, like, subscribe, share, and all those great things, you know what it is. And we appreciate you guys. All right. We look forward to talking to you guys again soon.
Bye guys. Have a good day.